Today, the football fans taking on their club's billionaire owner. And beauty pageant applications are on the rise. But has anything changed?
This part of the ground here is the Gallagher Corner. It was basically the lads' corner of the ground. It was probably the most raucous, to use a local expression. This was where the Radgies went. This was Strawberry Place, and there's some fantastic photos going back, you know, to the 50s and 60s when this place was absolutely swarming with people. It just sums up the enthusiasm that there is for football and this this fantastic but flawed football club that we support.
For Newcastle United fans, St James's Park Stadium, right in the centre of the city, is the heart of their club. But now it has also become the backdrop for boycotts and protests as supporters make a stand against the club's billionaire owner, Mike Ashley, also owner of the high street chain Sports Direct. Since he bought the club in 2007, the stadium has become almost one big advert for Sports Direct, with signs all over the grounds.
It's a defilement of the football ground. Just on the roof there, it says Sports Direct. That is exactly where the club crest should be. It's kind of, in my opinion, it's like, I'll sponsor your wedding, but you have to put the name of my company on your wife's wedding dress.
Mike Ashley is renowned for buying failing brands at rock bottom prices and for making savings at every possible turn. But now, things are looking uncertain for some of the big brands in his empire.
Shares in Sports Direct have fallen to an eight-year low in response to company results.
Sports Direct says it regrets rescuing House of Fraser and has warned that there will be more store closures. Mike Ashley said the problems at the department store were nothing short of terminal.
Mr. Ashley, are you worried about the tax bill?
No.
No?
No, not
confident
worried.
Confident it'll all be fine?
Hopefully, yes. Yes, confident as I can be. Okay.
Should staff be concerned at the moment?
No, I hope not. Yeah, we'll try and keep as many as we can.
And at Newcastle United, fans are worried about the club's future. The Premier League starts today, and on Sunday, there's a planned boycott of Newcastle's first match of the season against Arsenal, to send a clear message to Ashley that he's no longer welcome on Tyneside. From The Guardian, I'm India Rackerson. Today in Focus, Mike Ashley versus the fans. Who will win in the battle over Newcastle United? Just to let you know, there is a little bit of strong language in today's programme. So Josh, you're a Newcastle United fan.
I am. Yeah. I'm from Hartlepool, but a lot of people from Hartlepool are Newcastle fans. My dad used to take me up there when I was a kid with all his mates.
And you're also a producer here at Today in Focus. And you've been up to Newcastle to meet some of the supporters. Tell me who you met.
Yeah, so the first person I met was Wallace Wilson.
Hello, Josh.
How are you doing? All right, mate.
Hi, I'm
Wallace.
How are you?
Come
nice
in.
To meet you. Thank you so much.
He's this kind of really unassuming, kind of polite guy.
Thank you.
He's very quiet, but his passion for football kind of just bursts out.
Only a young lad when he played against Newcastle, and he absolutely destroyed their right back. Absolutely destroyed him.
He first started going to Newcastle games in 1963. And he had a season ticket for about three decades.
These are the programmes I was telling you about. I don't know.
And he's got this like huge collection of matchday programmes that he's been keeping since then.
How huge?
It's pretty massive. I think he had to sort of like go up into his loft and bring like a box of his favourite ones down for me to see.
Quarterfinals, which we played against Vitória Setúbal, it was an absolute blizzard. McNamee picks up two handfuls of snow and starts rubbing them into his arms.
He was really keen for me to see these particular ones from the time that Newcastle won the Fairs Cup in 1969 when he was nine. It's one of the last times Newcastle have actually won anything.
I used to go to every game, go to the match of the afternoon with my dad, and we used to walk over. You could see St James's Park from my house. We'd descend down the hill and then over the Tyne Bridge. You were getting closer to the ground and there were more and more people heading in the same direction. You felt part of something. You felt part of a growing force heading towards the ground. So my dad and me, we didn't probably do a lot together, but we did that. That was our time. That was every fortnight. And it was, it was important. I think it is special at Newcastle. It's evidenced by the fact that even when we are a poor side that's not challenging for trophies, they're still pulling in 52,000 to every home game. Now, that's either a blind loyalty fanaticism or people are just completely stupid. It's probably a combination of the two.
OK, so you met Wallace first and then you went to meet Michael. Tell me about him.
Yeah, so later that night I met Michael Martin.
My name's Michael Martin.
He founded the True Faith fanzine. He was one of the founders of the original Newcastle Supporters Trust. Kind of a massive figure among the sort of diehard community of Newcastle fans. He was sort of smartly dressed in a polo shirt, buttoned up all the way, and the polo shirt was black and white.
Where did you meet him?
So we met in a pub called The Strawberry, which is like a really special place for Newcastle fans. It's right next to the stadium, St James's Park. I've been on there in match days, sort of with me dad and his mates, and you have to literally queue across the entire room and like out of the door to get a pint. When you're in there, the walls are like just absolutely packed full of pictures of sort of great figures from Newcastle's history. Jackie Milburn, Malcolm MacDonald.
24 minutes and 20 seconds gone, and Malcolm MacDonald, on his debut at St James's Park, scores his first goal.
Keegan.
We're still fighting for this title, and I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Shearer.
Shearer hits it! Oh, what a goal!
Bobby Robson. The sort of walls are just absolutely covered.
Takes Newcastle to Wembley!
You know, we were a wonderful football team, a wonderful football side to watch.
Fantastic strike by the captain.
It's being held back at the minute by the dead hand of Mike Ashley. In my opinion, the most miserable period of Newcastle United's entire history, from 1892 right up to the modern age. We've been in lower league positions, but we haven't felt as so dispirited as we are right now. I think he's emptied the club, hasn't he? And he's emptied the club of a lot of things. He's emptied the club of assets. He's emptied it of people. So there was hardly anybody that works at St James's Park anymore. The club is more or less run from Shirebrook Sports Direct headquarters. So the club's not a major, you know, decent employer than it was. So he literally has taken livelihoods off people. He's also cheapened the club. But I think the big thing he's emptied the club of is hope and ambition, and people just being absolutely fed up to the back teeth of the same shit season after season after season, which is Ashley just doing the bare minimum to keep the club in the Premier League, investing in absolutely nothing.
Mike Ashley, the self-made retail tycoon, is famously the owner of cheap fashion chain Sports Direct. And he also has a history of buying up shares in struggling brands like French Connection, Evans Cycles, and the department store House of Fraser, all at rock-bottom prices. But his purchase of Newcastle United 12 years ago felt like a whole new game.
He'd just floated Sports Direct on the stock market and become a billionaire in terms of the value of his shareholding.
David Conn writes for The Guardian about sport and particularly on football's relationship with money.
And Mike Ashley has said that he didn't really know what to do with his money, so he bought a football club. I don't think that he bought Newcastle United at first as an investment. It seems like, you know, he'd become a billionaire and it was something that was going to give him a lot of fun.
He did say that, didn't he? He said, look, I want to have some fun and win some trophies.
Yeah, I think the supporters were quite hopeful when Mike Ashley first took over.
Just a word about the Arsenal
physio. He did give quite a show of being one of the team. At one point, he was there in the stands, downing a pint in his Newcastle shirt.
What the Geordies do best.
Is he in a rush?
But who is he? What do we actually know about him?
So Mike Ashley is a sort of ruddy-cheeked, round-faced character who owns, he's by far the majority owner of Sports Direct, which started with one shop. And he's built it into this high street behemoth, which has also seen off almost every other sports retailer that we had on the high street.
Great Umbro offers. This England away shirt, just £8. That's £8. Denstone shin guard, only £3. Just £3.
The way that he's done it has been on price. It's cheap, reduced, special offers are just plastered everywhere in the shops. There is a pilot high, sell it cheap feel.
And what's his personal style then as a businessman?
You know, the anecdotes are of lots of drinking, going to the casino. You know, there was a court case where a businessman was claiming that he'd made an agreement with him in one of these drinking evenings. And in the course of the evening, Mike Ashley had vomited in the fireplace.
Right.
And I think that's become quite a sort of iconic moment when people think about Mike Ashley and his business style. But I also think that Ashley himself is very forensic. He's very obsessive.
A store 100,000 square feet, if it's £150 a square foot shop fit, that's 15 million to refit those House of Fraser stores.
He's got a grip on every detail of the Sports Direct business. If he can see a way to shave half a second off a delivery time and realise that that'll save X many millions of pounds overall in the business, he'll do it. So I think to paint him just as the Good Time Charlie misses the forensic business person that has built a high street empire at a time when the high street has been a disaster for so many other companies.
And it became clear as well that his cost cutting didn't stop at the time saving. It also came at the expense of his employees. In 2015, The Guardian carried out a big investigation into the working conditions at the Sports Direct distribution centre in Shirebrook.
Jackets and vests, guys.
They found that temporary workers were effectively receiving hourly rates of pay below the minimum wage because of strict searches around shift times.
I've just done it.
And more than 80% of the staff were 0 hours contracts. And the centre was described as this kind of Dickensian workhouse where staff were given black marks for sickness or long toilet breaks. And that all led to a parliamentary inquiry. And then, David, there's this amazing moment where not long after the news breaks, he goes to visit the warehouse to kind of give shareholders and journalists a bit of a tour. And on camera, he goes through the search procedure that people have complained about.
I can ask you, any contents of your pockets into the grey tray for us?
He empties his pockets and there's a massive wad of £50 notes in his pocket.
A lot of cash there.
A lot of cash?
Yes, I've been to the casino. I don't, please, right?
Yeah, and the contrast between the wad of cash and, you know, the less than minimum wage that the people were earning was, let's say, not a great look.
At first, when he bought Newcastle United, things were going pretty well. He made fans very happy when he brought back the legendary Kevin Keegan as manager. But then he and Ashley fell out very badly and very famously over the signing of players.
You can't work with these people, you know.
Why?
Because you can't trust them. They tell you one thing, they mean another.
That you and he eventually left. That seemed to be a big turning point for the fans.
At that point, Mike Ashley said, well, he obviously wasn't having fun anymore. He was intensely unpopular with the supporters and he said that he would sell up. So he wants, a considerable amount of money for it. And it didn't happen. And then there was certainly a culture change where Mike Ashley said, I'm coming back and I'm going to run the club as a business.
How does he run it?
Gradually, there came to be a feel that the cost cutting was taking over. And overlaid with that was what you can think of as the sort of sports directification of the stadium. St James's Park, I mean, it's a lovely name for a ground, St James's Park. First, there was a proposal to actually rename it the Sports Direct Arena.
Wow.
And that was...
That's bold.
It's quite difficult to think how he could have made himself more unpopular than by doing that. But if you think of it as a shrine, a hallowed place, to then just, you know, brand it as the Sports Direct Arena was terribly crass.
The actual name did change briefly before being quite quickly reversed back to St James's Park, but it still feels like a Sports Direct Arena, right?
They have absolutely plastered the stadium with Sports Direct advertising. To feel this kind of cheapening of it, that it's become almost like a branch of the Sports Direct, pile it high, sell it cheap, sports retailing empire. That has really sort of twisted the knife.
So, there's the heart and the history of the club, but there's also what's going on in the background, in the club's finances. And Newcastle fans feel that despite the financial windfalls enjoyed by many other Premier League clubs, they have seen a bare minimum of investment. In the 12 years that Ashley has owned the club, they've seen two relegations and only one finish above 10th place. The club has been up for sale since 2017, with two high-profile takeover attempts failing, and Ashley reportedly asking for twice the price he initially bought it for. And over a period when commercial revenues at other clubs skyrocketed, Newcastle stagnated as Sports Direct until recently was effectively getting free advertising. Their new manager is the lowest paid in the league, and to add insult to injury, the new home shirt for fans is the most expensive in the league at £65.
Supporters are actually financially aware enough to recognise that a football club does have to live within its financial means. So I don't think they're expecting galactic star players, but they feel like it's gone way too far the other way and that the whole emphasis is on the bottom line. Mike Ashley might, you know, have a different perspective on this. He might say that in the realities, the real world realities of the Premier League, Manchester City are owned by an Abu Dhabi sheikh. Manchester United is an absolute money-making machine. Chelsea's owned by a Russian oligarch. And, you know, in that company, Newcastle United just don't make the money. They don't turn over the money, which those clubs do. And therefore, they can't attract those kinds of players. They can't realistically compete in the top six. And therefore, he's only being honest to say, look, we're in the Premier League. And, you know, if we finish around 10th, then we're doing well. Count your blessings. But I think the counter to that is, you know, they think that they could be a Liverpool. You know, they're a major club with a stadium that's got more than 50,000 people in it. There's just a feeling that there's so much more potential there than it's achieving under Mike Ashley and Sports Direct.
To be fair to Mike Ashley, the club has spent some money this year on new players. But I think for most fans, the summer has been overshadowed by one moment. The extremely popular manager, Rafa Benitez, leaving the club.
Again, it had a feel like they really weren't spending very much money at all. And what Benitez said was that he wasn't being supported to be able to run Newcastle United in an ambitious way.
So fans aren't happy.
They're fed up, and they're fed up of being fed up.
Josh, it's pretty clear that fans want Ashley to sell the club and just leave. How have the supporters been responding to the current situation?
So the way Michael Martin describes it is there are sort of two feelings among fans, anger and apathy. Anger is what you see in the protests outside the Sports Direct shop on Northumberland Street that have sort of been going on for years. And it's also the driving force behind kind of the next step, which is this boycott, this proposed boycott of the Arsenal match this weekend. So after 3 decades of being a season ticket holder, Wallace gave up his season ticket and stopped going like a few years into Mike Ashley's reign.
Right.
And now he's the one trying to organise the fans and sort of mobilise them to take action against Ashley.
I think what's happened is that, and this is probably the worst thing, what's happened is that Mike Ashley has recognised that Newcastle's greatest asset is its support and how loyal it is. And what he's done is he's exploited that support for his own ends. So he knows they're going to continue turning up, and he thinks to himself, this is going to provide a wonderful backdrop to my adverts for my businesses. Until people stop going, he's going to continue that, because it's the only way that you can impact on Mike Ashley is financially. He's not bothered about football. It's just another tool for him to make money. The supporters only really own one thing inside the ground, and that's the atmosphere. If we can change the atmosphere, we have a horde of empty seats, then that's going to completely change the backdrop for Mike Ashley's adverts. And I think that's the way we have to approach it. If you can do that, then perhaps he'll become a more willing seller. It might take a long, long time, but we're prepared to be here for the long run, however long it takes.
What about Michael? How does he feel about it?
So Michael Martin's kind of gone the other way. He says he's drifted from what he used to feel as anger into apathy.
I know dozens of people who I would have considered to have been absolutely black and white to their bootstraps who don't go anymore. They probably go and watch 11 black and white shirts on a washing line, you know. That type of supporter who just, they've just logged off, so to speak. And that's all down to Mike Ashley.
You've been a season ticket holder for how long?
Since the 80s, definitely 30-odd year, I would think.
Are you renewing this year, do you think?
I've still got my season ticket. I haven't pressed the button on cancelling the direct debit. I haven't got round to that. That's something I'm going to have to do with a strong drink, I think. But I can't envisage going to games because there isn't any joy to be had. Knowing what we know about how he's running the club, I can't bring myself to want to feel that level of frustration again. Not going to football matches got a lot more to do than just not spending 90 minutes at the match. It means you're leaving a network of friends and routines that actually you don't realise when you're not going to do it how much it really does mean to you, you know, because and of course it's painful. You know, but just doesn't make me feel good anymore. Knowing that the club, what it means, its history, the supporters, the people that love it, are being ripped off by this bloke and how he approaches the football club.
This all clearly means so much to the supporters, but Newcastle is just a small part of Ashley's empire. And at the moment, the retail core of his business is facing some major challenges. Having recently bought House of Fraser, the chain has lost millions. Stores are closing, jobs have been cut. Several senior executives have left his company, and even Sports Direct stores are struggling.
The high street is under great challenge, mainly from online shopping, just about everywhere. And Mike Ashley was this exception, because, you know, he had a formula at Sports Direct and he was seeing off all the other sports retailers. But this seems to have been a real, cold bath for him. One thing that it really means to me in the concept of Newcastle United is this is a very busy man. This is a man fighting fires on many different fronts. And so how much attention does he and can he really give to Newcastle United, and how much does he really care about it? And if it is surviving and doing decently and it's financially sound and making a profit, is Mike Ashley going to really care that some supporters wish it was doing better than that? And I think the answer to that, you know, from the evidence that we've seen over the last few years, is no, that he'll be quite satisfied with that.
So, David, we kind of get this picture of Mike Ashley as a businessman who has built his fortune on buying brands, squeezing every ounce of value out of them and almost removing their essential quality in order to make a profit at all costs. Do you think this Sports Direct kind of approach is what's happened at Newcastle United over the last 12 years?
This was something that when I first started writing about Mike Ashley and Newcastle United in depth, that I kind of just slowly started to realise. So you go into a Sports Direct store and you see brands that really mean a lot, that had a real cachet at the time. So there's Lonsdale in there, there's Slazenger, there's Everlast. They really evoke kind of class and sporting sort of glories. But what you realise is, he's bought the brands mostly when they've actually gone bust. So he owns the name, and the actual gear, the kit that's being manufactured to have those names on, just isn't of the same kind of classy quality that you associate with it. And thinking it through and talking to some Newcastle supporters about this, they can't help feeling that this is what's kind of been happening with their own club.
His reign is a catalogue of broken promises. But I can't see us giving up. We're going to stay here and we're going to keep doing stuff and making life uncomfortable for Mike Ashley until he leaves. And we can return to being a competing football club again.
We asked a representative of Mike Ashley and of Newcastle United for a response to this episode, but neither wanted to comment. You can read more of David Conn's reporting and keep your eyes on the boycott at theguardian.com. And as the Premier League kicks off, do follow the season with our podcast comrades on The Guardian's Football Weekly, with Max Rushton every Monday and Thursday. Coming up, why are more women than ever applying to be Miss England? Now, applications to compete in Miss England are rising. This year they reached more than 20,000. Pageants are apparently now about character and personality, charity and empowerment. But The Guardian's Amar Kalia has been trying to work out what, if anything, is different.
A lot of people would think of beauty pageants as having this kind of 1980s, very kitsch feel about it.
Here is Miss Universe, Barbara Palacios Tede.
Tiaras, sashes, sequins everywhere, people requesting world peace in the finale.
Definitely world peace.
And I ended up going to the Miss England final in Newcastle. You don't know what I've been through. I mean, to be honest, there was still quite a lot of that element there. They're trying, at least on the surface, to change things. They've not got the swimsuit round anymore, although it still exists optionally. You can send in pictures and, you know, they are raising money for charity. So some of the people I met, you know, were doctors. Basha Mukherjee.
Our new Miss England 2019. Contestant number 8, Basha.
And when she won, it was on the ceremony was on the Thursday night, and then she ended up doing her first day's work in hospital as a junior doctor on the Friday. And I asked her about, you know, why would you do this? Partly because, you know, being a doctor is a very public role to have, to occupy. I mean, she really didn't seem very kind of concerned about that.
There is still a large portion of the academic population that look at pageants in the prejudiced way, you know. And they do think of it as quite old-fashioned and objectification of women. I'd like to change that. And for that, we need role models. We need people who have branched out to both fields, academia and beauty. And that's always been my passion, to break stereotypes. And
a lot of the conversations that I were having were kind of centered around this idea of objectification. And some of the arguments kind of said, well, there's a Mr. England competition, so, well, if you're objectifying women, then you're objectifying men too. I mean, of course, yeah, you are. You might just be objectifying everyone. Basha had an interesting point to make where she said that
women get objectified wherever we go. What we need to do, however, is to use that to our advantage. This is why the fundraising effort is pushed so much, because we are able to do that. I was standing there the other day with a crown on and nice makeup on, and little girls were coming up to me thinking I was a princess. They wanted to take pictures with me. And then you target the parents, obviously, and then you tell them what we're trying to do. That's how the message gets sent out. So yes, objectification is as much as a positive thing as it is a negative thing.
It was kind of disheartening to hear that, I feel, because it was very much, felt quite defeatist in a way, that, you know, I'm stuck in this position. There's nothing I can do to challenge it, so I may as well try and use it to some kind of advantage. It was one of the questions I was asking kind of organisers as well, is, you know, if you're so keen on changing the image of the pageant, why even call it a beauty pageant anyway? You know, that was one of the things I kept coming across, is that it's not about beauty, it's about kind of character and personality. But it clearly is, and, you know, that's still clearly what kind of sells for them. There's a big nostalgia, I feel, around you know, the Miss England contest, because it is the most historic. I think it's been running since 1928. So even though they are trying to change a swimsuit round, and they really love to, you know, talk about how it's optional, it's obviously still there. It's clearly still, you know, rating women based on their bodies. So there's definitely a reluctance to say goodbye to the tropes that make pageants problematic.
I always say that the glamour world is glamorous from the top, but it's actually quite not so glamorous when you get deep into it. At the same time, medicine is very de-glam from the top, but it's very beautiful on the inside. And I think you need a bit of both in life.
That was Amar Kalia. My thanks to him and to David Conn. And of course, Michael Martin and Wallace Wilson in Newcastle. That is all for this week. We'll be back Monday. Today's programme was produced by Joshua Kelly and Gary Marshall, with thanks also to Salvi Shalai and Olivia Davies. The sound design is by Axel Cacoutier, and the executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll see you next week.